Happy Bitcoin Wednesday, freaks. It's your boy Odell here for another Sill Dispatch, the show that's focused on actionable Bitcoin and freedom tech discussion. I know you freaks just heard me yesterday with the wonderful BDK team, but now I am back to talk about LDK. Before we get started, as you guys know, Dispatch is 100% audience funded. Could not do it without you guys. We have no ads, no sponsors. Purely funded by Bitcoin donations. The easiest way to support the show is podcasting 2.0 apps like Fountain Podcasts, Breeze Wallet, Echo LN, and others. You simply download the app, search for Citadel Dispatch, press that subscribe button, load it up with sats, choose how many sats you think the show is worth, and then as you listen, those sats get streamed directly to my node in real time. It's extremely fucking cool to see those sats. And empowering to see those sats come into my node day in, day out. I really do appreciate all the support. You can also support the show through geyser.fund. That's connected to my own node. That's just regular Bitcoin and Lightning payments. I have a paynim. It's Odell, very easy to remember. That's a BIP47 reusable payment code that you can use with Sparrow Wallet or Samurai Wallet. All these methods allow you to support the show easily with Bitcoin, and all relevant links are at SillaDispatch.com. Also, I know it's a bear market. I know it's a recession. If you can't spare any sats, the easiest way to support the show is to share with friends and family, subscribe on your favorite platform. It's available on Twitch, YouTube, Rumble, Bitcoin TV, Twitter, every podcast app. Subscribing, reviews, sharing it really do help. And then last but not least, this is an interactive live show. We do it a little bit differently on Dispatch. You all are partially the hosts of the show, and you are part of the conversation. So you can join that conversation either in our 24/7 Matrix chat or via Twitch or YouTube. And once again, all the links are at SillaDispatch.com. Before we get started, I like to read the top four boostergrams from the last episode, which is pretty impressive because that was yesterday. Boostergram is a way to attach a message to a set amount of sats and you send it through a podcasting 2.0 app. You can think of it like a global commenting system with monetary, you know, money attached to it. So we have Ride or Die Freak Eric99 with 21,000 sats saying thanks for the content. Thank you, Eric. We have at Blogging Bitcoin with another 21,000 sats saying, the Padawan wallet is awesome. Anyone want some testnet sats? Padawan wallet is awesome. We have at Piccolo Jr. with 18,081 sats saying, Palindrome Boost, BDK crew are fire, and their tools, Elephant and Padawan, are lit. And then we have Ape Mithrandor with 7,777 sats saying, very interesting. Would be cool to get Lloyd and Evan on for a follow-up since it sounds like they're doing the cool new stuff in BDK. I agree. We'll make it happen. So with all that said, let's get started here. We have a very busy week at Bitcoin Park. After this, we have our monthly open house meetup, which is going to be focused on open source, which I'm very excited about. So here today, we're talking Lightning DevKit, and we have Val and Jeff. What is up, Val?
Hey, Matt, thank you so much for having me on. Yeah, as you said, I'm with the LDK team, so excited to be on here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Thanks for coming to Nashville. Welcome to Bitcoin Park.
Sweet.
And we have Jeff. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, Matt, how's it going? I'm also on Spiral, working on LDK with Val. Happy to be here. This is a great spot.
So, Jeff, what is Lightning DevKit?
I told him you had to take this one.
Yeah. No, the hardest question, like, what do you work on? Okay, so, you could think of in software development, you have SDKs, these software development kits, which are used to sort of interact with different, you might have like some libraries that you use, you want to, have some networkings, for instance, some SDK there. LDK is a Lightning development kit. So I guess the question first is, like, what is Lightning? So Lightning is a protocol for that scales Bitcoin payments, makes them, you know, fast, instant, for billions of people to use Lightning and Bitcoin. And LDK is a way to allow developers to integrate Lightning into their Bitcoin wallets. And it's very customizable. You could, really tweak it in different ways, or you could use sort of like different, utilities that we built into LDK, kind of layer up on top of each other to let us handle that for you. It's really customizable. So I don't know if there's anything Val wants to add on that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good summary. And I'd say it's also, because it's in Rust, it's like very performant and lightweight. So it can be very suitable for mobile non-custodial wallets in particular. Mm-hmm. That's a special use case. So we definitely have some unique challenges in terms of balancing like mobile users who just want a Lightning wallet and people who want to customize the absolute crap out of it. So that's a constant balancing act for us.
Yeah, and I think when you think of like the Lightning ecosystem more broadly, there are other implementations of the Lightning Network protocol. And we all sort of participate together in, oh, yeah, NVK looking through the window at us.
Oh, man.
We have these, I guess primarily it's four implementations, but there's probably some smaller ones out there. The primary ones being LND, Core Lightning, Eclair, and LDK. And those are sort of implementations of the specification. So we collaborate on what is Lightning, and through some back and forth and some, I guess, just, implementations, we come up with ways to, define Lightning for, and each of those implementations sometimes have their strengths and weaknesses. So, some people might say that, LND is more for like servers and routing, and so that might be more of their specialty. Whereas like I guess maybe Eclair is more like mobile, and but they have like trade-offs too. So
yeah, I'd say that's accurate. Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't feel like we're really trying to compete. I'd say we're trying to fill in things that aren't being filled in, particularly non-custodial mobile, and also just kind of the sheer flexibility allows for certain privacy use cases advantages in some cases, but kind of above all, I guess, experimentation and just letting people's imaginations run wild with what you can do with Lightning. So,
I mean, the comparisons happen a lot, like LDK versus LND or LDK versus Core Lightning, but it's a little bit different what you're trying to build, right? It's not.
Yeah. I mean, you think of it as like, at the core, we have this part called Rust Lightning. So LDK is based on the programming language called Rust. It's pretty secure, safe to use, becoming pretty popular these days. And from that, we sort of layer more up on top of it. And so someone who's like really into the nuts and bolts of Lightning, they could just take the very core that we have, customize it in different ways. They could add their own like networking stack to it, use their own data storage. They could choose to, for Lightning, you'll need transaction and chain data be fed into it, and they could choose how they do that. They could use a Bitcoin full node. They might have like an Electrum instance running somewhere they want to communicate with. So we provide like all those different mechanisms to do it. And from that, from this core, we've built up different abstractions that allow for things to be done a little more easier if you're really not into fine tuning it such.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been kind of a journey for us, kind of learning what people want to customize versus the things that they want us to fill in for them. Like we were always, or for a long time, we've been built to be able to use Electrum, but a lot of people don't, or Explora kind of stuff that's not just a full node or Neutrino. But just kind of learning that people would rather we built modules for them so they can just use it out of the box versus some people want to customize certain things. So that's been kind of our journey as a project.
Yeah. And I feel also like when you build something that where the developer is the user of the product, you don't really know what they want until they start using it, right?
Like LND, like the end user is me just downloading and running LND. Mm-hmm.
like where LDK is more like software developers trying to.
And LDK, I mean, I don't want to say never say never or whatever, right? But LDK's goal is not to be that, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
There's not going to be a moment where I'm just downloading LDK and running it.
So we'll have basically, as we build up our layers, there might be something that's kind of like that, but very customizable.
Almost like a demo.
Yeah, yeah. So Belle wrote a sample application, for instance, for LDK. She could go into that was sort of like before we had too many of these layers built up, but we're like leveraging some of the utilities. So I don't know if Belle could go into some of that.
The sample. Yeah, that was definitely a really important step as a project, just in terms of learning what utilities we needed to build to make the developer experience bearable, basically. That's been around for a few years. And for a long time, that was the way that we pointed people to running LDK was by running our sample node. And now that's definitely evolving quite a bit. We have this new LDK node project that's Elias on our team is in charge of it. And that was basically, I think, started in response to a lot of mobile devs. They want to run LDK, but they just want an out-of-the-box Lightning node. They don't care about the customization. You know, they just care about the performance and the way that it accommodates the very constrained mobile environment, basically. So that was kind of the motivation behind LDK node. We think that's going to be really awesome and just provide that out-of-the-box experience that people want. But the nice thing about it is that it also kind of makes it easier to spin off a more of a server version of LDK as well. So while you're right that, yeah, we're definitely not trying to like compete with in the routing node front per se, it's still like some people are interested. Like it would be awesome if it could exist. And in an ideal world, we would have example LDK nodes of all these different things just for, you know, the flexibility of it and just.
You're kind of hoping someone else builds that, right?
Yeah.
It's like I would download a, you know, a something that was built with LDK at its core, but it's a consumer.
Yeah, for instance, product, like right? Sensei was a, right. like a stab at that. You know, it was.
But now he's with you guys, right?
That's what I hear. Is it public yet?
I was wondering.
Oh,
I'm not sure. I think you, well, not with Spiral itself.
Congrats.
Well, it's live, so.
Yeah. Hope so.
Yeah. I think it might have been already.
Okay.
Well, who knows? Well, now it is.
Yeah.
Well, don't share it, freaks.
I know it's official at least.
But anyway, Sensei is fucking awesome. So like that was kind of that idea, right?
Yeah, yeah. So that was one of the but to like Vale's point about like, you know, we have these developers that come in. We have our Discord. We used to be on a Slack, now it's primarily Discord, GitHub we use for communication. And so we see all, you know, we hear all these use cases that people want to use LDK for. And we learn a lot from that. Like we want to grow this developer community such that, you know, we're actually servicing them in some manner. That is, you know, beneficial for the broader Bitcoin community. So having that, you know, that access to us, I think has been very important for like the growth of the product of LDK. And it's definitely shaped like what our roadmap's been.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like we're constantly kind of being pulled in different directions by different projects. Like we have the most edge casey projects that want to just run 1,000 nodes on one little SGX box,
right?
Be constantly shutting them down, spinning them back up. So we're kind of like hearing their complaints in our ear, and then simultaneously, like other end of the spectrum, like Cash App running these huge routing nodes. They want to be able to load balance between them, or not routing nodes, but you know, receiving a ton of
right.
payments and
super high volume nodes.
Yeah. So to some degree, it's like a balancing act. Like, you know, do we go so far down one way that, you know, it detrimentally affects the, you know, the other side of the spectrum of what these use cases are. So we kind of have to be very mindful of that
and try and be in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. And just be careful, like what do we want this to, you know, who are we supporting, and like define some limits, I guess. And we also have some constraints. So for instance, you know, while we are written in Rust, we have support for other programming languages. So like on mobile, you're not typically going to use Rust. You'll have like Kotlin Java for Android systems, and I guess it would be Swift for iOS. So we have this like essentially layer called like language bindings, which is a way to go from Rust to a different language that you're more comfortable with. So defining those language bindings has been quite a chore. I mean, if Matt comes on at some point, I'm sure you could chat about those.
Ooh, Corella.
Yeah, Matt Corella.
Our language bindings are literally, it's like we have Rust, LDK, then we generate another layer of Rust on top, and then we generate C bindings that can interact with the new Rust layer, and then we have like Swift and Java that like talks to the C bindings. And and the C bindings are not meant to be consumed by C programmers, if that makes sense. They're just for the bindings. So
yeah, so you have these C bindings, you're producing, say, you know, Java sort of an API for LDK. And ideally it's very, I guess, idiomatic in people or for programmers in Java. They use all the constructs that they would use when programming in Java. Maybe I'm not sure if we're quite there for that, but that's like the end goal. Like it should feel like you're programming in Java if you're using Java bindings. It should feel like you're programming in Swift if you're using the Swift bindings.
But the core is Rust Lightning.
Yeah, underneath the hood it's all Rust. So
yeah, that's definitely the goal. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, like, yeah, we have this certain Rust client and we can't always do things in idiomatic Rust, for example,
okay,
because we need to accommodate for these language bindings and for all these weird, like WASM environment, mobile environment.
Oh, no, I was saying it flashes, the block lock flashes, so it's super distracting. I was telling MBK about that earlier. I need to turn off the flash in the studio. MBK's in the studio, by the way, to the listeners.
He climbed a fence to get in. Couldn't tell.
Did he actually climb it? We gave you a key card, didn't we? I don't have another mic. Otherwise, I would have you join us. So, I mean, you mentioned Corallo. Me and Corallo go way back from New York Bitcoiners. That was one of the reasons why BitDevs last night was so great, because I just remember being a young Bitcoiner and it was just, you know, Jay of New York BitDevs and Corallo going back and forth about things. I had no idea what they were talking about.
Yeah, I was at one of the BitDevs in New York after I first got hired at Spiral, and I was just amazed at that. I think they call it like the creme de la creme.
It was special. At that time, it was like peak, too. Mm-hmm. It's still very good, but, you had to be there at the time. It was amazing. But when I talked to Matt, what we talk about a lot is this idea that LK is very focused on mobile developers. And, I mean, we talked about this yesterday with the BDK team. When I look at, you know, the next, you know, it's very meme worthy, the next billion Bitcoiners, right? the overwhelming majority of them are going to come in mobile. They probably will never interact with Bitcoin on their computer. They might not buy a hardware wallet from MBK. Mm-hmm. Like they will just use a mobile phone and that will be how they interact with this global financial network. But Lightning wallets, despite all the hype on Twitter and whatnot, Lightning wallets on mobile is still a very...
unsolved problem.
Yeah, it's unsolved. It's a pretty unsolved problem. Like wallet of Satoshi is very, very, you know, was one of the most commonly used ones. It's completely custodial.
Yeah.
A lot of the other ones take different trade-offs. You know, they're not fully custodial, but you're trusting the LSP. You're making all these trust assumptions and whatnot. So one of the main focuses with LDK, I guess, is to try and at least mitigate some of these problems and make it easier for developers to build good, you know, self-custody, sovereign Lightning wallets, right, that are easy to use.
Yeah, yeah. So I think Val's going to speak at this because Lightning on mobile doesn't have quite the Venmo-like experience. And like that's some of the more recent sort of spec hagglings about. And like asynchronous payments, for instance, Val's been working on. She could give a little more information on that.
Yeah, definitely. There's like a ton of challenges with mobile.
Let's go through them.
Yeah, just like backing up. For example, there's no such thing as having a safe shutdown with your node. Because Apple can just kill the process anytime, even if it just goes into the background. Obviously, it's very memory constrained, very resource constrained and all that. And you also want to be able to write everything to disk safely, and you need like the cloud backup in case people close their phones or delete the app. So can you think of any others before we get into async payments?
As far as just like
mobile challenges with Lightning, there's a lot.
They're offline a lot, right?
Yeah, offline. Like this, the whole Venmo experience is like you just want to pay your friend and they
receiving
might not be
there. Inbound liquidity receiving. Is a major
the liquidity
UX
as well.
Right.
Friction.
Yeah, I think LSPs are kind of coming up to address that. But yeah, something I've been working on recently is async payments, because to Adele's point, a huge problem is that if you're on a mobile non-custodial Lightning wallet, you're going to be offline all the time. Like you close your phone, you're offline all of a sudden, right. You can't receive.
Even if your phone's online, the wallet's offline.
Exactly. Yeah. Like even if the app isn't in the foreground, you're probably not going to receive it. And there's a lot of kind of halfway solutions out there that in some cases can work amazingly well, such as like sending a notification to the receiver. And in some cases that will get you a little crumb of CPU time that's enough or something. But it's all a bit like I don't want to say half-baked, but like if your phone is dead or in airplane mode, you're not receiving that payment, right? So async payments, kind of async payments to the rescue on that one, I guess. And that started, I think, December 2021. Blue Matt sent out an email on the mailing list about this scheme that was based on Onion messages. And the basic idea is that the sender's LSP will hold on to an HTLC until it gets an Onion message from the receiver saying, hey, the receiver's online now. You can let the HTLC fly. Does that make sense? Kind of at a super high level?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But like that's kind of an improvement on...
Basically, your phone is connected to this LSP's node, right? And the node's like kind of holding on to it for you.
Exactly. Right? So this is assuming the sender has an LSP and the receiver has an LSP. But obviously, if the sender is always online, it also works. They can be their own LSP.
Right, they can send it at that moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for people that are not familiar, Onion messages is a way to send a message to another peer on the network, not necessarily your media peer, but some other node on the network, using basically the Onion routing protocol that you would normally use for a payment. The difference, of course, is you don't need to actually send any funds. So, you know, finding a route is a little bit easier. You don't have to look for liquidity. And there's no problems splitting. Like if you're multipath or multi-part payments, you're not trying to find multiple routes to your tenant recipient. So you could send essentially a network message through the Lightning network itself. So you're, in this case, I guess it would be the LSPs are essentially communicating, right? Mm-hmm. When it knows, I think you go into the sender's LSP, right? Will basically hold the Onion and then send a message through Onion messages to the recipients. Is that correct?
Yeah, saying there's an HTLC available to claim when the recipient mm-hmm. comes back online. And then, when the recipient comes back online, they'll send an Onion message to the sender's LSP saying, or to the sender, I believe, saying, mm-hmm. you can let the HTLC fly now because I'm online. Yeah.
So everything happens native in Lightning. So you don't have to have a separate message layer.
You don't have to directly connect to any of the peers. There's this concept that Val worked on, too, is blind to paths, which you could essentially take a portion of the path. Typically, I believe it's always probably the end of the path and have a few nodes that are through this, magic encryption, sort of blinded away from everyone else on the route, such mm-hmm. that you don't need to. Well, I guess that's kind of how Onions work, but in general, but you're the recipient, the intended recipient of the payment or the message for instance, would have supplied essentially a portion of the route, the blinded portion, and you could form a path from yourself to that introductory point of the blinded route, the blinded path, I should say. And like you don't have to essentially dox the recipient.
Right. Like right now, if you make a Lightning payment, the recipient's node pub key is known by the sender
exactly.
and all the routing nodes in between. Mm-hmm. Which is horrible
and
for receiver privacy.
And their channel information too, their UTXOs. Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's rough.
Makes it extremely difficult to use Lightning privately on mm-hmm. the receive side.
Exactly. So async payments, kind of help with this because I guess they would be using, would they be using blinded paths at all in that or not?
I mean, they would be using them for any and all Onion messages that are being sent in theory. You would get privacy there. Blinded paths are cool. It's like, you basically select a popular node in the graph that's a few hops away from you and then create encrypted payloads for each hop until you, and then you reveal that to whoever the sender is. All they see is the intro node's pub key, who has a million connections and channels anyway, and you could be any hop within four hops of that popular node. So
and because they're known pub keys, you just encrypt it with their pub keys, right? Like the routing node's pub keys?
Yeah, you just, yeah. Well, the intro node is... like the recipient or the sender can see that because they need a way to
they need to know where they're sending, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly. But every other pub key is obfuscated, so it's totally private in that sense. But yeah, I guess getting back to the async payment, so Matt sent out that scheme on the mailing list like December 2021, and that's been kind of a big priority for me recently. And an interesting part about it is that we're going to be basing it on Trampoline. And so that's kind of a prerequisite for it. And the reason for that, I guess for context, Trampoline is a way where a sender who doesn't have a lot of, it could be a mobile non-custodial sender who doesn't have a ton of payment data, doesn't really know what the best routes are, maybe doesn't even have enough bandwidth to sync the full gossip graph. they can give their payment to a trampoline node, and the trampoline node will find a route for them on their behalf because they know all the good routes because they route a ton of payments and have the full graph.
This is what Phoenix is using, right? Async is, does Async use trampoline?
Yeah, TBS was the one who proposed it, and they are a trampoline node, but
they don't have it enabled yet, right? But that's the plan or something.
I think they have like some proprietary one that, maybe not proprietary necessarily, but like based on like an initial draft, and they sort of use that, but I don't know all the details.
They do have an initial version of a kind of async payments like thing, but I think they definitely run a trampoline node straight up as well. And they've been pushing for adoption of that. It's just that, I guess, like people haven't really had time or listened until now, if that makes sense.
Well, async's interesting, right? Because like the most, like they have an implementation, but really it's used on Phoenix, which is one of the best mobile wallets. But it's like, I think Phoenix is the only thing that uses them really, right? Like a consumer wallet wise.
Yeah, it's interesting. They tend to...
they kind of just have like a vertical stack there,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like they don't really push it that much.
And like purely mobile focused too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I want to go back. We talked about onion messages, right? Yeah. So one of the hot button issues is Bolt 12.
Mm-hmm.
And Bolt 12 is this idea that we could have a privacy preserving reusable invoice.
Yep.
Rather than generating a new Bolt 11 invoice every single time, mm-hmm. that also has our pub key in it. There's a bunch of different benefits with Bolt 12, but one of the key things it relies on is onion messages.
Yep.
And the common refrain of it is onion messages, they're potentially a spam vector. They're a denial of service vector. You can just, if there's no payment attached to it, I can just send a ton through your node or whatnot.
Yeah, that was the narrative. Yeah.
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 So,
One way to mitigate that is
counter that.
I think the one that we've been thinking about is just send or just allow onion messages from peers that have channels with you.
So, and you already have a channel with them. You're already gossiping with them
Bitcoin
and whatnot.
Down there. So, you know, this counterparty, if they spam you, you could, there's ways you could have, like, I guess it's called, I'm blanking on the term now. It's a sort of like a pushback mechanism. You're saying, okay, you're sending too much.
Back pressure.
Yeah, back pressure. There you go. And I don't know if, Vale, if you're in discussion with some of the people in Oakland when we met about that.
Yeah, no, TBS has a really good solution for that, in my opinion, where basically if you're getting too much onion message spam, you basically just send a message to the last person that sent you an onion message, who's likely to be the spammer, right? Just by like probability, saying, hey, like, please shut up.
Because you don't really know if it's them. It could just be going through them, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you send your next PR message like, hey, please shut up, and forward this to whoever sent this to you. And it just goes all the way back to the original spammer.
So like a game of telephone.
You just muzzle them, basically. Yeah. You like telephone it back until they are forced.
But does it also have like a block? Oh, you're just sending back spam towards them. Is that what it is, kind of? Or are you actually blocking the messages from coming?
I
think both.
Yeah, so I don't know the exact proposal, honestly.
Because it's kind of funny if you just spam them back.
No, I think you're... Yeah.
It's like a Mexican standoff feature.
But no, I don't know all the details of that, so I would be like just surmising at this.
Because personally, like my simple monkey brain, like I really want Bolt 12. Like I'm.
I've been implementing it, and Vale's been doing a lot of the early prerequisites to that with, like we said, onion messages, line of paths. Offers is really cool. I'd like to see it. Right now, we have Async and Core Lightning are doing some interoperability testing already. We came in a little bit later and had quite a bit of feedback for the spec, so it's sort of evolved and morphed a bit over the last number of months. But at this point, we are hoping, I guess, not this coming release, which should be out in a couple of weeks, but the release after, we'll have full support for offers.
So that'd be you, and Core Lightning already supports it, right?
Yeah, they've had to change their implementation since we've given feedback, but yeah, Russell was the one that proposed it, so. That's been implemented essentially.
So it would be cross-compatible?
We will do interoperability testing with them before we make it public.
And Async doesn't have it yet, right?
They are currently doing interoperability testing with Core Lightning.
They basically have it.
They're almost ready to. So it'll just be L&D that doesn't have it. And
after the three of us. L&D
and like Electrum's Python implementation.
Yeah. There's a few like esoteric implementations out there that probably won't have it. L&D has a phased approach of doing Bolt 12. I mean, there's like five phases from what I saw, so I couldn't rattle them off right now. But they will eventually have it one way or another, it sounds like. It's just a matter of priority for them, I believe.
So you think L&D will implement?
They have people already contributing to the implementation. It's just going to be a more slower approach to get there. So I think it will be there. Just
bullish.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just to go back, when we're talking async payments and on your messages, it's actually way cleaner than that, right? Because it's literally just your channel partners that you need to send the onion message.
I mean, it's more like you would probably prioritize messages from channel partners and then only forward onion messages from randos if you had time, or maybe not at all. That's also totally fine. It'll probably be some kind of config or, option.
Yeah, it's like a policy sort of change for your node.
2 weeks, two bolt drops?
Yeah.
MVK is making a 2 week joke on the couch for the people that don't know.
The public data structures for bolt 12 in the next release. The following release, so that'll be 114. Then in 115, the hope is that we'll have actual blinded path payments and forwarding and all that jazz.
That's exciting.
So yeah,
yeah, we're really excited about it. Long time coming.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not. I think it's funny. Like we, especially if you live in this space, you think everything moves really slowly. But then if you just like think back like a year ago or 2 years ago, you know, I do a lot of work with activists through HRF.
Yeah.
And I just recently did some work with them. And I was thinking back to the first workshop we did, which was 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we were using Green Wallet with the activists because Lightning didn't exist yet. It didn't exist in practice yet. Blue Wallet didn't exist yet. Moon Wallet didn't exist. Sparrow Wallet didn't exist. Spectre Wallet didn't exist. Strike didn't exist as a company, right? I think Cash App maybe, it was at Cash App headquarters. I think maybe they had just added Bitcoin support. Like when you start to actually, okay, let's think back like 2 years or whatever, like things are moving very fast. And it's easy to get discouraged. And I get discouraged a lot. So I think it's important to remind everybody that there's a lot of progress being made. It's really hard to keep track of it.
Yeah, yeah. There was a time where, you know, people, Lightning doesn't work. You know, my payments are always failing.
I go through phases. I'm like either like super bullish on Lightning, or then I get like become like an on-chain maximalist again, and then I like get bullish on Lightning.
Yeah,
it ebbs and flows for me.
Yeah, I think too.
You like, become an on-chain maximalist periodically.
Yes.
Interesting.
What are the privacy?
Well, like I have like Tony. I have like Tony on. You know, we like spend like 2.5 hours talking about Lightning privacy nuances or whatever.
Oh yeah, if you listen to Matt Carillo's talk at TabConf about all the things that broke. Yeah, everything's.
But we can fix it. Is the second word. Yeah.
I think we're pretty excited about all the upcoming, I guess, improvements to Lightning, especially around privacy and reliability, especially facing payments. So, you know, Lightning works, but now it's going to hopefully, you know, it'll take some time, but it will be much more improved.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely like certain like really not techie friends where I would genuinely hesitate to recommend Lightning to them until we had like the async payments feature, you know? Because I don't want to be their tech support. Like I want it to just work for them. It's like selfish almost.
Yeah. If you ever like pay yourself on the same phone with Lightning, you're like, wait, what happened? And they're like, oh, I have to switch the app back for it to actually work. But yeah, async payments.
I like that.
No, yeah, I feel that. And you see it a lot. I mean, a lot of my focus is on like the education space. So you see the pain points just all over the place. But it's definitely way easier than it's ever been. Even, you know, 6 months ago or 8 months ago or something like that.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I think, like, on the Spiral side of things, I guess it's maybe not entirely Lightning related, but we have we've funded the, you know, people in the Bitcoin design community.
Right.
And just seeing, like, improvement in UX, like Steven's here this week, and he was one of our grantees.
Steven's awesome.
Yeah.
DeLorme. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, I remember when they had the Bitcoin design guide first come out, it was like their V1 of it. They're like, hey, now we're doing Lightning. And it's like, the questions are, okay, like, you know, what, there's these, I guess, huge questions around UX and Lightning. And what does that mean? Like, should Lightning eventually just become some, I guess, technology that no one really cares about, that it's using Bitcoin? They just know it's Bitcoin. It's not Lightning. Anything special about it, just how Bitcoin works. It's fast. It's instant scales. So that's the hope, right?
Yeah, definitely. Like, ideally, people won't even know they're using Lightning, right? It'll just be a seamless instant payment. So
right. That's they're just great. Sending money.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the unified QR, on the Bitcoin design side, the unified QR codes is kind of another step in that direction.
Yeah, is that Bolt 21? I forget which.
I think Bolt, Bit 21.
Yeah, I think like Block took that on for Cash App. They announced that at the Miami conference last year, I think.
Where, and then Miles Suter wouldn't shut up about
it. Yeah, yeah. We like to get that QR code down, sized down a bit. It was a giant QR code they showed on screen. So Bolt 12 will help a bit with that.
It has native support, right?
Yeah, it has fallback addresses as well. But I think, I guess the issue would be like if you have a wallet that doesn't support Lightning.
The whole point of BIP 21 was that it was backwards compatible because it's natively an on-chain address, right?
Exactly.
Like the memo field has the Lightning address in it.
Yeah, yeah.
A simple way to look at
Whereas like once everyone's has Bolt 12 support, you know, of course, take time for wallets to adopt that. You would be able to have an offer code that had fallback addresses, for instance. Actually, it's technically the invoice, which is communicated through Onion messages. So you don't have to even worry about the size of that. We could go in more into the QR codes and offers and if you want. I'm not sure.
It is nice that Bolt 12 uses the QR side.
The audience is very, my audience is very technical, and also they're happy to just not understand 50% of it and try and take it in by osmosis.
Yeah. I at least have this like, more present of mine because I've been working on it. So, you know, offers, like I think you mentioned earlier, it's like a way to have like a static QR code for multiple invoices, essentially.
And it's really nice for, I mean, we're streaming video right now. I could just put a QR code there. I could post it in like my banner on Twitter. Like in the Global South, people like print out LN URLs, right?
No, we were getting pressure from Cash App for that feature because sellers want to be able to print out a QR code.
And just like, put it on the I remember back in the day like 2013 and stuff for the Bitcoin adoption, like that's what they did. They just took a fixed address, put the QR code on like a little piece of paper, maybe laminated or something. It was like, oh, you want to pay me Bitcoin, send to this thing.
Yeah, so like the predecessor to offers is Bolt 11 invoices,
right?
And so we kind of talked a little bit about that. Bolt 12 offers, you could think of an offer as a precursor to an invoice. So you know, they could still be represented just like a Bolt 11 invoice as a, you know, a BEC32 encoded string, but and also represented as a QR code. The difference though is you aren't given essentially I guess it would be in the invoice, there's like a payment hash, right? Typically, there's no payment hash in an offer because you're basically requesting an invoice. So the offer may be, you know, I might have a description. I'm getting like a cup of coffee. It might have some information about like how many cups of coffee you could purchase. It'll have an amount that coffee is in, I guess, MSATs, or it could actually be in a fiat currency. Currently, we're not supporting, creating offers of fiat denominations, but we could pay them since those are eventually translated to MSATs. So essentially, once you scan this offer, you'd say, okay, I want to request an invoice for this item. And through Onion messages, you can request an invoice using an invoice request. The offer may have blinded paths in it. I think we're enforcing that, right? Is that?
Yeah, it went back and forth, but it is required at the moment.
Yeah, so blinded paths will be required. So the offer itself will have blinded paths. There's some like technical challenges around that I think we'll have to be careful about. Basically, making sure you have liquidity to the node on those blinded paths. But once you request an invoice, the person who published that offer would get that request through an Onion message. They would, you know, check it out and send you back an invoice of a particular payment hash and the amount that you requested, making sure if there's any currency conversions that is accounted for.
Yeah, so that was a kind of a good improvement because people were having a hard time encoding an invoice in a QR code that was scannable, right? If that makes sense.
Yeah. So I've seen, especially, I mean, once again, Global South, shitty old Android phones, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
Do you have a question?
Audience.
I find that like a lot of devs sort of like forget that you don't need so much error correction on those QR codes. Like,
MBK is saying that devs often forget you don't need so much error correction on QR codes.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
But that's the thing, right? Like the QR codes, like you don't want them to be too dense. They're hard to
scan. So with Bolt 12, you can have.
Yeah. So LDK, like we don't take on many dependencies, as Val knows very well.
Made our own HTTP server. That's all I need to say.
So we don't have a QR code dependency, but you know, we do produce the string, the BEC32 encoded string of an offer. There's also different other, I probably don't need to get into these, but there's like a refunding mechanism in offers. So a nice little feature there.
Very flexible.
And then something we're calling, I guess it would be not necessarily spontaneous invoices, but unsolicited invoices, which is, I guess, more handy for like donations, I would say. You don't have all that back and forth with invoice requests that way.
Wait, hit me on that last part, the donations part.
Yeah, so this is, I think it's in the spec. We haven't implemented it on our side yet, but there's you could have like an invoice without a invoice request that it originated from. So you'd have a QR code for an invoice.
Right.
And I haven't gotten into many of the details of this, but essentially I think it's helpful for donations, right, Belle?
I thought...
Or am I thinking of the...
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll have to get back to you on
this. I thought that you would want to specify the amount in your invoice request, unless I guess the unsolicited invoice has an optional amount.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm not sure about that. I'd have to look at the spec.
I'd have to look too. I kind of thought that some people just wanted unsolicited invoices, so maybe they could skip to that part of Bolt 12 and then later add onion messages like that. Yeah. But anyway...
But in general, Bolt 12 to me the main use case of these reusable offers, right, that you could just like print out or post or something was donations. Like that was like the pain point. The pain point was
been confused about the unsolicited.
And you see it all the time. Like as you know, people want to raise money, right? And so like, what are they stuck with? They're stuck with like running a full BTC Pay server. Mm-hmm. Or using a reusable Bitcoin, you know, you reuse a Bitcoin address, which is horrible for privacy and
you have
to pay on-chain fees and whatnot. Yeah, but if you can just tweet out a QR code or a text string.
Yeah, and offer a QR code.
And then you're good.
Yeah, and we
get a tattoo. Yeah.
we've actually designed the implementation of our offers. And I think a lot of the other implementations are doing this too, such that it's sort of like stateless, where if you produce an offer, and then you produce a invoice from that offer when they're requested, we don't actually hold on any extra data. Like there's no problem with like a ton of donations coming in. They're not going to like swamp your server and have like, or your data storage rather, and have to take or like keep track of all these like payment hashes and pre-images to release, because we sort of derive that from some of the information that we have in the offer. So it's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. And I'm excited for in the original spec for offers was subscriptions as well.
Right.
That got taken out just because, you know, for simplicity. But I'm excited for when that gets added back in.
I mean, the original spec had a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah. And then for subscriptions, that's when, at least currently, that's when having fiat denominations makes a little more sense, because, you know, this fluctuation in the price of Bitcoin, like if you're...
But then it requires some kind of oracle or...
Yeah, yeah, that's one of the reasons.
To know what the price of Bitcoin is, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So if you want to do it...
If I'm sending you $5 a month, I don't know how many sats that is.
Yeah, so if you want to do it in like a trustless manner, you would have to have some sort of like, you know, oracle or money oracles to kind of come together on that price and be able to... You know, when you request the invoice, put that amount in, essentially.
We have Innocuous Finch in the comments asking, what wallets are available right now that use LDK?
Let's see. We have Cash App is using it, but it's not self-custody. So there's that one.
Were you guys involved in the Cash App situation at all? Or
in which situation?
Adding LDK?
So we were consulted by them. We didn't actually implement it for them.
Yeah, so can you talk about how that happened, or you're not allowed to talk about that? Or
it was probably, we could some details. I think Ryan Lumba shared quite a bit at...
Because that was a big undertaking, right?
Pardon?
It was quite a big undertaking at the time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. It started, let's see, it would have been... a year from this past November, I think, around that time frame. And it only took a few months for
him. Well, first they only added sends. Yes, and it took a while for them to implement receives.
Yeah, that is true. They did that. They work on Slack. You know, we don't have much of a Slack presence, but we're like kind of lurking on their channels. They'll ping us if they come into problems.
Yeah, we had a channel that was just
the combined channel.
Yeah, yeah. So we would kind of have a bunch of notifications turned on for that and just try to get back to them as quickly as possible. They definitely had some unique feature requests, such as the Phantom Node feature that we ended up adding.
What's that?
It basically allows you to run several Lightning nodes and load balance payments between them, such that any of the nodes can receive the payment. So that was really important to them just because, for obvious reasons, basically in case nodes go down or need to be restarted. But yeah, it was definitely interesting because we were thinking a lot about mobile, but then our biggest customer was extremely enterprise.
Right.
We were coming out with these enterprise features. So yeah, it's definitely, but it was great working with them. I think I was happy. Mm-hmm. We were all happy with the way it turned out.
Yeah. Yeah. Then we mentioned earlier, but Sensei
is
on there. BlueWallet has an implementation. It's kind of hidden behind a feature.
It was in the Puppet Jack video.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Sorry, he was using it. I forgot.
But it's not in the main release.
It is in a release, I believe.
It's like developer options.
Yeah, you have to basically tap developer a bunch of times and you have access to it. I think their largest, the issue why they haven't gone forward with that is because of LSPs, is my understanding.
Yeah, they're waiting on an LSP to be available because OverTorment basically doesn't want to be an LSP or
Fair
manage
enough.
That. He wants to use someone else's service.
He just wants to make a wallet.
Yeah. And this kind of goes back to like the mobile case of like, you know, mobile's hard. We're not quite there for
like, right. I mean, you look at the big ones, it's like Breeze, they're their own LSP. Mm-hmm. Phoenix is their own LSP. You're kind of forced to do it.
Yeah.
Something like Zeus is like, they don't have an LSP, but they require you to use your own node and connect back home.
Yeah.
Mutiny also uses LDK. We were just talking about those.
Yeah, boys. I mean, we were meeting with Spiral cool team today and just like kind of going over all people are at least experimenting.
Ellen Exploit uses, you know, Tony's project.
Yeah. Ellen Exploit.
Like, he attacked my node with it.
There's
he did.
Probably... Yeah.
I'm like his test case.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I don't
he just constantly attacks my nodes.
But there's probably like, I would say, couple to a few dozens of people, projects, etc., experimenting with LDK based on the spreadsheet that Sir Steve has been coming up with.
Yeah, definitely are considering it on the roadmap.
Yeah, so it's various degrees. I would say, you know, we're pretty happy with where it's going, but we'd of course like to have, you know, this be one of the more premier ones for mobile, and it's just going to take time for that.
That makes sense to me.
It's actually weird because sometimes on our Discord, someone will come out of the woodwork and they have built like this full LDK app and we had never heard from them.
That's the cool part about open source,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's awesome.
There's Valera Labs. Is that?
Yeah, Valera Labs. That's like one example.
16-year-old developer from I forgot what country, but
his that's child awesome. Prodigy has been building this like multi LDK node privacy thing.
It's pretty nuts.
Is that release? Is that?
I think he's trying to hire people right now. I don't think they definitely done quite a bit of work on it.
That's my impression too.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, where do you guys want to go with this next? I know I'm the host.
It's a good question. I don't know.
What are can we just pull back for a second? How long have you both been at Spiral?
So same time we got hired, right? It was a little over 3 years ago.
Yeah, like October-ish 2019, mm-hmm. September.
And then that's a while.
Yeah. So we were sort of in the inaugural class with Arik and, Matt got hired earlier and Steve was.
Matt was like, it was like Steve and then Matt, right?
Yeah.
Steve, then Matt. We were all interviewed by them. We went through the regular block interview process and came together end of September, early October. And yeah, we've grown since. So we have three, well, before there are three new engineers, we got Connor Okus, who is a kind of PM on our project,
right?
Our team, rather. Haley Burke, who's also in sort of the PM program manager sort of a role. And then I'm not sure if I could say I can't say the other one person's name, but
I don't think so.
The person
don't do it, Jeff.
Who runs our Twitter account? Mm-hmm. Nameless. He's
I just got
along on our website at all.
I just got to meet that person. It's great.
But yeah, then we hired three new engineers recently with Elias, Wilmer, and Gershron. Yeah,
and that person writes those projects. Awesome
blog
posts.
Actually, that's a good idea. Valerie, I don't know if you want to point to anyone that either of us could go into them, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like we could just like switch off. I mean, one of the new hires, I mean, they joined last May, so they're not really new anymore, but Gershron from our team is working on the VSS project. And I thought that was cool because it's a versioned storage service. And it comes from the fact that one of the unique things that LDK can provide is switching between devices. So you can run your Lightning wallet on multiple devices instead of just one, kind of like, you know, how you can use WhatsApp on your phone or your computer type of thing. So yeah, and to do that, the powerhouse behind it is going to be this storage service where you take a lot? I mean, Jeff can talk more to it because he's been actually reviewing the code.
I've been reviewing a bit. So I guess the problem that we're trying to solve is, like, you know, like Val said, the multi-device. And one issue you'll have with Lightning is if you have a device out of sync and it's using old channel data, like,
you lose your money.
Yeah, you lose your money.
You lose everything.
You're very inclined to.
That's how I lost all my Bitcoin. I had to start fresh.
To Tony. Felon split.
So version storage service is a way to sort of, you know, you have this service for storing your channel data, and it versions in such a manner that if you have another, like multiple devices trying to sort of make updates to it, it knows if it's sort of out of sync, and it, you know, you can sort of refresh the data and go from there. So it's very useful for Lightning.
Does it require cloud? Is it a cloud storage or?
So the storage itself right now, it's a Postgres database. It's going to use SQL. You could run it wherever you want, though. Like, so if you want to do,
it could be locally on both devices, or does it? No, it can't.
It would have to be somewhere.
It's either your server or someone else's server,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. I mean, I suppose you could have it on.
You could have it on like an Umbral or something, maybe.
Yeah,
right?
Like that. So that kind of helps solve that case. It's still pretty early on, like we have the development underway, but the initial version will be like working with just one sort of one client essentially to the service. So there's never really a problem with things being overridden. But then when you have the multi-device sort of approach, then get into the more tricky parts of implementation. So that's a pretty cool project.
And that's a basic concept that people expect, right? It's like, I'm running it on my iPhone and I want to use it on my iPad and I want it to be the same wallet. I don't want to run two different wallets.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's what people have come to expect, I feel like. It's a reasonable expectation, so.
That makes sense to me. Anything else cool that,
yeah,
that
so
you guys
that,
are excited
that's,
about?
That's Gershron's project. We have a couple other things. Well, one thing I guess we didn't touch on, which we probably should.
Let's do it.
Arik wrote something called Rapid Gossip Sync, and it's essentially a way to, it's good for mobile devices. If you have a sort of like a semi-trusted setup where maybe you have an LSP that you kind of trust, and you want to route payments privately, and there's basically, you know, the way you would do that typically is you download the whole gossip graph from the network and you verify that the channels are actually there, which would require a full node, and you're able to sort of you know, through that long process of downloading that data, you know, from the P2P network, you could eventually come up with a path to your intended recipient and make a payment. That kind of sucks for mobile. Like, if you're offline, you're not getting. Yeah, go ahead, Val. Sorry.
Okay.
So, I mean, people see it, right? Like, when you, like, some of these Lightning wallet apps, like, you open it and you're just sitting there syncing.
Yeah,
right?
You're syncing.
Like, the loading bar is
a little
going,
spinner.
Yeah.
Just
it's infuriating.
Yeah.
So it's not actually like block data coming in necessarily. It's more of like getting the P2P gossip, so you know what the channel graph looks like. So Rapid Gossip Sync is basically a way to deliver that gossip data in a more compact format, from, like I said, like a sort of like a semi-trusted individual, like a LSP. And from, I think, the size of the data I've seen, I mean, you could do like incremental updates as well, but it's like the order of like a megabyte or less sometimes. So I think the full graph might be a little more.
I looked it up in preparation. So normally if you're syncing gossip, I think it was either 53 or 83 megabytes, and then you get it down to like 2 megabytes. Using Rapid Gossip Sync, and it goes from like a few minutes to 0.4 seconds.
Yeah, so like all the signature
pretty big gains.
Yeah, all the signature data is stripped, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. There's some, I guess, the encoding format makes it easy for like if you have short channel IDs, it doesn't have to have the full whatever 60 or 8 bytes for each one of them. It could, you know, have an offset from the previous one, for instance. So it's very compact format. Then when you have that data on your phone, you can, you know, you could do your own pathfinding, and thus you're not sort of telling your LSP, you know, everything about who you're paying, or even relying on, I guess there are some, I guess, drawbacks, like you're relying on them to deliver that data to you, and that it's, you know, actually accurate. They're not hiding anything from you. But you know, they might be a fair trade-off.
Yeah, I mean, they can't like steal your funds or anything.
Right.
Originally, actually, that was a privacy downside. This is kind of a tangent.
Let's do it.
Originally, that was kind of a privacy downside of Trampoline, was that you would be revealing who the recipient was to whoever the Trampoline node was.
Right.
But the cool part about Blinded Paths now is when you put those two concepts together, you're no longer revealing the recipient, but you still get all the benefits of using Trampoline, if that makes sense.
If there's multiple hops after the Trampoline node, right?
Yeah. So if you like, if you give the Trampoline node, say, I want to send 100 sats to Matt's Blinded Path, he right. doesn't know that it's to Matt. He just knows that it's to someone within four hops of this.
All right, you have some plausible deniability at least.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's funny because like T-Best kind of came up with both of these concepts, but he didn't even plan for them to like go together, but they just ended up going together.
That
really
is pretty
perfectly.
Cool.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool. So
they compound on top of each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah, so that's Rapid Gossip Sync. We have a new project as well called LDK Node, which we, now earlier we were talking about like layers of abstraction we're kind of building up in this LDK development kit that we have here. And LDK Node, we're focusing that on mobile usage right now. And it's, you know, some developers who want to add Lightning to their mobile app are sometimes a little overwhelmed by like, the way they could customize LDK, and they just want it to like, you know, pick something off the shelf and have it tied to their
right
Bitcoin wallet on their mobile app and kind of work. So we came up with a very narrow API. It's like, I think like 6 or 8 different function calls. Whereas if you look at some of the other Lightning implementations with their RPC calls, there's like 100 or something like that. And like, maybe that's great for the power user, but for some mobile clients that just want to integrate Lightning, you know, that's maybe a little not necessary. So LDK node is more opinionated, I would say. And there's some of the choices on Mobile if you want to go through, like with, you know, where the block data is coming.
Oh, this is what came up last night, right? I think I'm not going to say who said it, but.
Oh.
Because this Chatham House rules, I think.
Yeah. I think we're talking about it a bit, but I could go into more detail. But for instance, like on a node, you might have, you know, we decided for this particular configuration of LDK node is more geared towards mobile. And one of the mechanisms for retrieving data from the chain, the blockchain, is Electrum or Explora. And it's a little different interface for LDK versus like a full node, and probably a little more difficult to work with compared to that. You're not just saying this block was connected, this block was disconnected, and there's a reorg. You're not just like feeding blocks in one by one. You're monitoring, you know, transactions of interest, essentially, based on, you know, your activity with your channel openings and whatnot. And from that, you only feed in data to LDK that is actually necessary for your own channel. So a mobile user is going to have one or two channels, maybe. They're not going to have a lot. And so it's a good approach there where you have a smaller amount of data going into it, for instance. So that's like one of the sort of the, you know, choices that was made for LDK node for its mobile setup, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. I think one of the last steps we're figuring out is, or Elias is figuring out really, is persistence. But yeah, I think he's hoping to get it ready in March. And then ideally it would integrate with VSS to just the storage service.
Right.
Just make this seamless multi-device Lightning experience. So yeah.
And then from there, developers can then build nice consumer wallets.
Yeah,
mobile
and we'll have
wallets,
bindings, of course, on top of that.
That's the other nice thing about LDK node is that because there's so few function calls, there's a lot more flexibility with what kind of bindings we support. Because mm-hmm. like for the whole LDK API, we are not going to manually write that. There's just too many things. But for LDK node, it's more stripped down so far. So we think that should be an advantage. Yeah.
I mean, Bitcoiners talk a lot about like high time preference versus low time preference. Like LDK is like the ultimate low time preference kind of Lightning project, right? It's just like slow and steady building blocks.
Yeah.
And then in a few years, we'll look back and it'll just be this nice, nice piece of foundation, right?
Yeah. And we would like, you know, we have the sibling project, which you spoke to the developers
BDK.
Yesterday, BDK. And
they're named fantastically, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, that was all Steve.
Yeah, we have... you know, eventually it should just be Bitcoin development kit, right? Like Lightning should just be transparent. So at some point, I'm not sure how many years in the future it would be, but we'll have this one development kit that anyone could use.
Right. It'll be kind of combined.
Yeah.
Because you need the on-chain component
exactly,
too.
Exactly. So that's the hope. I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff going on right now, like with Taproot, Anchor Outputs. So Wilmer and Ark have been working on those projects.
It seems a lot of people are regretting Taproot right now. You want to do why we should be happy we have Taproot?
I don't know if I could go into detail on that one.
You're not allowed to talk about it? We'll just tease. No, because of the ordinals inscription.
Ordinals. Yeah. That's right. Last night, yeah.
I mean, Taproot's another like load time preference building block.
Yeah.
Can't believe how far Ordinals has come.
It's pretty impressive. I think I'm going to have Casey on controversially. I'm going to have Casey on this weekend. So.
I mean, Taproot, it's going to be slowly rolled out into Lightning, is my understanding. Initial work, I think, is involving like the funding outputs and commitment transactions.
Right.
And it's going to be like a phased approach very deliberately. And Lalu from Lightning Labs was one, and Eugene, I believe, as well. Wrote the proposal for Taproot, published it just last, I want to say June, end of May into June, somewhere around Oakland when we were there. It's got a lot of good feedback, and I think it's gone through some iterations and come
along. Our team has been working with Lalu on that. So they've been kind of like going back and forth on the spec and making Taproot a thing. I think it's getting pretty close, it seems. So that's been really awesome.
Yeah, we're super happy with that progress, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's some really crazy things you can do with Taproot combined with Lightning, right? Like, it just gets really interesting.
Yeah, more than I could probably describe right now.
Definitely some like crazy multi-sig, multi-sig stuff.
Yeah, so like the first phase is using...
And to be clear to the freaks that maybe are completely confused, Lightning at its core is 2 of 2 multi-sigs for every channel. Look, Rod brought MVK and Mike, so you can stop heckling us from the couch. Okay, continue. Musig.
The Musig 2 is, I think, the mechanism for doing the multi-signature for Taproot on Lightning. And so with that, I guess the initial phase, like I mentioned, is funding output and commitment transactions. So that's going to take some time, but that's the first phase of it. And there'll be many more to come, I'm sure.
Yeah, what I'm most excited about for Taproot is that after we have Taproot, then we can get PTLCs. And just going back to the async payments thing, with HTLCs, with async payments, you lose the proof of payment property. But with PTLCs, there's been some recent work and we get the proof of payment property back, if that makes sense. That's been something that we've been talking about recently. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
I was going to say, just trying to wrap up a few things that I could recall that we have left. Dual funding. So we have outside of Spiral contributor who's been pretty active on LDK, Duncan, working on dual funding. And then splicing is something that we're looking forward to as well. So
yeah, that's on you, Jeff.
Yeah, right? It's my next project, but I'll have some help as well. I think Wilmer is interested. And one guy, Jervis, who is...
You want to give us the splicing shill? Why should people care?
I don't know if I can give a shill yet. I'm behind on splicing right now.
We'll see. Oh, you're good.
I mean, I guess the idea is you...
You're like, you're like 99% ahead of everybody else.
You want to increase the size of your channel, essentially.
Right. I already have my channel, and the only way to make it bigger is to close my channel and open a new channel.
Or you open a second channel of the same.
And if inscriptions are making the fees really high, then I have to pay a fee on both sides of that, right?
Yeah.
So splicing lets me do it with just one fee instead of two fees.
Exactly.
Right. So one on-chain fee.
Efficiency thing, I guess.
And you can also mix. You can also do coin mixing with the splices too.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool.
There's a lot of cool applications. I think there was the swap in Potentium part that was on the mailing list recently by Z-Man and Jesse Posner, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I got the name right, Jesse Posner. Yeah,
might be Posner.
Posner, not sure the pronunciation, but they that involves splicing as well, I believe, and so it's a pretty cool way to have sort of a lot of your on-chain funds kind of go right into a Lightning channel.
Yeah, really cool. And it's interesting because originally we were resistant to splicing. And the reason is having two channels is basically like having one channel, like with the same peer. I mean,
right.
Like you can just MPP over it and it's you can treat it as if you have one channel. Yeah. So we were like, oh, let's not bother with this because you can get like equivalent behavior in a way that's already
supported. Right, I could just open a new channel.
Yeah, exactly. And it's as if you...
But aren't there routing inefficiencies to have two channels? Like, So the way I learn is I just kind of like Leroy Jenkins into things. So when like Lightning first came out, I was like, well, let me see if like I'm going to get rug pulled if this thing works or does it not work or whatever. So I just created this node and I said to all the freaks, I said, if you open one to me, I'll open one to you, right? Like send me one Bitcoin, I'll send you two Bitcoin back. No, you open a channel to me, I'll open one to you.
That's risky.
So I ended up having like 100, 100 channel partners, but 200 channels, right? Just a lot of channels. Yeah. And my understanding at that point was that was highly inefficient. That really, not only did I mean, you should have as few channels as possible, but also that for each partner, you should only have one channel. Is that a thing or is that a...
So, I mean, at one point, I think, I forgot which implementation, but like only supported one channel.
CLN. So that was a reason, but now they do support multiple
channels. Oh, no, but that was fine. I just couldn't open... Like if someone... The few people that were using CLN at the time or at that time it was C-Lightning,
I mean,
so I just couldn't open a channel back to them. That was... Just didn't exist.
Gotcha.
But then with LND users, which was the majority, I would open one back. And I thought it was something with pathfinding or something like confused the nodes or...
I'm not sure. It really depends on the implementation of the pathfinding algorithm. So there's multi-part payment or sometimes you're multi-path, I forget which is actually correct. But the idea is you split up
your payment
across multiple HTLCs and MPP is usually how it's referred to as. And with that, if there's more than one HTLC involved, each one will have a smaller amount and are more likely to make it to the final destination. There's just more opportunities for failure as well. So that's
just with MPP.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't even think MPP existed yet at that point.
There was various incarnations of it, I think, going through time. But I'm not sure.
Well, where are you going with that, Val? You said, why don't we just open another channel? Like, why do we even need splicing? What was the answer?
Oh, yeah. I mean, not a major point, but basically people just ended up wanting it because they were just really set on their architecture being one channel per node.
It's just like cleaner mentally, right?
I think so. And I think it made their code base cleaner or something like that, even though we were just kind of like, well, doesn't make a huge difference. But sure. It just seemed like there was a lot of demand, even if we don't necessarily understand why alone. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's, typical in a software development project where you push back on complexity because the more complexity you have in a project, the more likely there's going to be a bug. So, there's things to mitigate that, testing, but it's a legitimate concern if someone comes around like, hey, you should have more than one channel if you're your peer, and like, no.
And then there's an interesting thing now that we're talking about multi-channel that I have heard recommended, which is this idea that you have this one public channel between your peer that is maybe smaller than this large private channel you have so that to the gossip network, they're not aware that you have this big...
That's interesting.
That you have this big liquidity channel between two peers, but they know they can still send a payment through it because it's just big enough that payment fits.
Yeah, I haven't heard that argument. So the idea...
But Tony can still figure out the private channels there.
I was sitting with Tony one day talking about he was essentially doing like probing private channels.
He's done it to my nodes all the time. Yeah,
short channel IDs.
He just came up with this whole list of them, right?
Like, yeah,
he basically doxed all of them.
Yeah, one day he just sent me. Did he do the same thing to you? He sent me all these things. He's like, "Are these your channels and UTXOs or whatever?"
Are you serious?
Yeah,
he did not do that to me, but. He did. My understanding of the project was that he examined the blockchain for things that looked like Lightning.
He used LDK for that.
Yeah, he used LDK. So
I think he tried to use LND and it crashed and switched to LDK.
Yeah, there's some database issues, I think, at the time. Yeah. I think they've resolved those since.
Yeah, they did the compaction or whatever.
But yeah, so we told him like, yeah, you could do this. It eventually will not work once you have short channel IDs, short channel ID aliases, I believe.
Yeah.
Which were... I think last summer we got those in. It was right on Oakland.
Yeah,
as well.
It was part of the zero conf, but a really nice side effect of it is that prior to them, you would basically dox your UTXOs if you had private channels in route hints and invoices.
Right. And because the channel ID was literally the transaction ID on chain, right?
Literally, yeah. You could just.
It wasn't like any.
It was
magic.
A combination of like the
block. It was just like put it in mempool.space.
I think like the transaction number in the block, and
it wasn't exactly like you couldn't exactly translate it, but it was like enough information to figure a lot of stuff out, if that makes sense. Whereas with SCID aliases, it's basically a random number. So there's no way of tying it back to an on-chain
That's great.
UTXO. Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm going to pull us back for 1 second because Anaki Wiss Finch came in with another question. It's about the VSS. Mm-hmm. What is, conceptually, what's the difference between that versus, you know, using Zeus on multiple devices and connecting back to your own node? It's because there's nodes running on both, right? That's the answer.
So each would have their own node running.
Yeah.
I'm not as familiar with Zeus setup, but at least for...
Well, Zeus is like remote control for your home node.
I guess I'm going based off what you...
Oh, that's remote control, yeah. In this case, it would be more like, yeah, you're genuinely running it.
Two independent nodes that are the same keys.
Yeah, you're not calling out to a green light node. Like, the node is actually on there. So...
That makes sense. He actually answered his own question, too, on the bottom. Anything else you want to go into? You were rattling off a list of cool projects from Spiral.
I don't think there's anything else. I can pull up our doc to see if we missed anything.
PTLCs, splicing.
PTLCs.
Val would have to talk about that one. I'm not.
Do we have to close all our channels and then open them again?
Yeah, sorry.
Everyone's a scammer. I'm rugged again.
I think what I saw, though, in the... I could be wrong about this. You don't have to for the...
Do you not have to? Can you just transition them?
There's been theoretical stuff, right, that people are saying we might not have to.
But for PTLCs, you're probably right there. But for the recent Taproot stuff they're doing with channels, I think you don't have to close them, but I could be wrong.
So I was sold the vision that my channels, I was going to pass them down to my grandkid.
Well, when block space is scarce, you don't want to close.
On-chain's so cheap, so... Well, I guess not with ordinals now.
It's still cheap for now.
Yeah.
Exactly. There, we got MVK in the house.
Hello.
You happy you got a mic now?
I mean, I shouldn't be talking. This is all lightning.
Do you have anything that you want covered here? You've been sitting with... MVK's just been quietly sitting on the couch for the majority of this.
Very minimum hackling.
This discussion. I guess fees are kind of...
Do you guys support LNURL?
We do not.
Are you?
I
mean, you could use it with LDK if you...
I know a lot of people don't like it, but it's actually quite useful.
I'm sort of unopinionated about it. I'm sort of indifferent, I would say.
It's a hack.
But as
I get how people that want to do a good design, they want to add it, but I feel like there is enough like market install base now for it. It's like everywhere.
But is it needed?
I have Lightning URL.
Yeah, but you also use a custodial Albi wallet.
Yeah, so I'm trying to do the normie. I'm trying
because he's sitting there. He's like, it just works. He's never had a Lightning channel.
That's right. All I want to do for if I'm like managing $100, $500, who cares, right? I mean, I'm gonna just download 3-4 wallets. One of them is gonna work, and it's great. I mean, I've been sending money on Noster like all day, every day, and it just works.
I mean, you can use LNURL with LDK if you want to.
But do we need LNURL in post-Bolt 12? Like, is that even...
There's this massive gap that's going to happen in terms of like just the adoption of Bolt 12 and every single, and the interop of that on every single sort of client. It's a massive install base out there.
What, LNURL?
Of LNURL. And it's nice to have your... Like, people know they can send me sats to nvk@nvk.org.
I guess that's a big one. Like,
I love that.
So is there something, is anyone thinking about human readable Bolt 12?
There was something called...
That's probably the strongest argument.
It's the DNS thing, right? I mean, DNS.
Yeah, I recall something, but...
You probably could do it with Bolt 12 as well.
There's something called like Lightning Address, but is that really...
That's LNURL. It's just, that's what he's saying.
But something like that you're saying for...
Yeah, this is translation, right? I mean, it shouldn't be that hard.
Like Lightning Address is an LNURL human readable.
So something similar for Bolt 12.
Yeah, Steve definitely has a vision for that. I don't think there's an exact like implementation plan, but he definitely wants the whole experience of you save someone's payment like in your contact info, and then you just go to pay Matt instead of going to pay
locally.
And another cool thing is you can have a proxy, right? LNURL proxy, which is the LNURLP. So for example, for the Albi stuff, so, I have my actual LNURL is the NVK at Albi,
Right.
But then they support proxy. So all I have to do is just put like, you know, like an identifier, essentially like some JSON just saying, hey, if you get anything on this,
it's like NIP 5
to the ALBI, then ALBI translates to whatever. But because it's on my domain, now I can have a human readable at essentially DNS, right?
Yeah.
For Lightning payment. That goes to my domain, then goes to Office domain, then goes to their node.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I mean, super useful and like easy for people to set up.
Yeah, I could imagine just different approaches being taken. I'm not super familiar with exactly what Steve was thinking about, but like just the general concept of, you know, once you pay someone, you should be able to keep paying them again. I suppose with like a Bolt 12 offer, like once you sort of scan it, you know it's for Matt or for whomever. Then if you're
just saving in your contacts.
Actually saving your contacts.
Locally, whatever. Yeah.
This one issue you think about is like, okay, if there's blind paths in there, are those always going to be in existence? So you might have channels close and then those paths might not work. So that's something like a UX thing we have to kind of work aware.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's one implication where like privacy impacts UX. Like that's always the thing in life.
So does that mean you need a new Bolt 12 at that point?
Yeah. Exactly.
A new offer, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, you would have to have a new offer.
Oh, so they're not really, so don't tattoo it.
Well.
If like a routing node goes down and you tattoo it, you're screwed, right?
I guess it depends on what your blind paths are. Like you can have, yeah.
Val told me to tattoo my offer on me.
Hey, that was
said not to tattoo it. Not yet. Eventually, you would want to tattoo it.
Noted.
I mean, so I think there's also like privacy challenges still around blinded paths. Like, depending on how long they are, you might be able to sort of infer, you know, where they come from.
But this is like a classic privacy hole that I hear all the time.
Yeah.
Which is like the perfect is the enemy of better, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that shouldn't delay rollout. Exactly. Like, it's still significantly better than the current situation.
And there's probably a different strategy where you can make like fake hops at the end of blinded path. So you're maybe not the last one actually, but you know you are the one.
Or something like Mutiny and Sensei, where you're like you just spin up a bunch of like simulated nodes essentially.
Yeah. Well then you could. Yeah, I guess that could be a potential solution.
And then blinded path through your own nodes.
Yeah.
Does that even that would help, right? I think. It gives you plausible deniability.
But yeah, I guess just in general though, like there are with any solution that we have, there are going to be challenges. And so part of the, you know, having this being a community process is to have people poke at it and prod and find these problems so we could address them and come up with a solution that's going to work. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you both of you guys. Well,
thanks for having us.
Yeah.
This has been a pleasure. I'm on the bullish crescendo of my lightning right now.
Great.
Awesome.
I'll let you guys know when I'm on the bottom again. We'll have another conversation.
We'll talk you down from the ledge.
This has been an absolute pleasure. Before we wrap up, I'd like to end with final thoughts.
Final thoughts. Come to our Discord community.
How do we get there?
LightningDevKit.org. There'll be a link at the bottom of the page. We'd love any developers working on LDK or working with LDK to come and tell us what's good, what's bad, and help us improve it, contribute. We want more and more people outside of our core Spiral team to be part of our community and our contributors. So more the merrier.
Yeah, awesome.
Totally second that. And we're really welcoming, even if you don't know Rust, if you've never contributed to open source before, we still want you to come contribute and don't be shy and check us out and use it as well.
Great. Well, thank you both. I'm looking forward to this meetup tonight. And are you guys going to be in town for a couple more days?
Yeah, until Friday.
Til Friday.
Looking forward to hanging out some more. Huge shout out to the freaks who joined us in the chat and who continue to support the show. I appreciate you guys. As a reminder, I will be ripping a dispatch with Steve Lee Friday morning. So definitely join us for that and keep an eye out for that. It'll be about a year since we had him last on Dispatch. So it'll be cool to like look back and see how far we come. Just to go back to our previous conversation. I think we've come a long way in just a year.
Yeah.
I think there might be two more dispatches by the end of the week in addition to that. So, so just pay attention to Noster or Twitter or the Matrix chat or subscribe on YouTube or Twitch or wherever. Podcast app. I don't know. You'll get notified. I'm just going to drop a ton of episodes on you this week and you can listen to them at your leisure. So appreciate you all. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Bell. Stay humble, stack sats. Cheers.